Finally, we make it. Hi, Susie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for finally coming on. I know we've been trying to connect in different ways. Even last year had some personal stuff come up, but I'm glad to finally have you on. And we just had a conversation a few days ago, I'd say last week, I think. And it was just I feel like that should have been part of the podcast episode, I feel like. So go ahead and give a little intro about what you do and all of that good stuff, and then we can kick it off from there.
Sure, sounds great. Well, thanks for having me. My name's Suzanne Huber. I've been a freelance digital marketing consultant for a long time. I'm basically operate as a micro agency and collaborate with other creators and people who are really skilled at what they do. And we basically kind of, fill that void of not quite a marketing agency, but not quite a full-time resource as well to help, small to mid-sized companies with their growth.
Is there a how long have you been in this space? Let me start there. How long have you been in the digital marketing space, and I guess how did you get started in that? Because there's so many aspects of digital marketing and stuff like that. So I'd love to know a little bit about the backstory about how you got started and what you still enjoy about that space.
Yeah, cool. Well, it's probably been close to 15 years now. And I actually got started because I was launching a software as a service company with an investor when I first graduated university. And I just learned quite quickly because I was kind of working in this company, not that many people. And I just learned quickly that, like using social proof and leveraging the power of that in my sales engagements and then starting an email newsletter, it just gave me that scale factor. So I was able to communicate with so many more people versus that one-to-one. So I actually kind of got into digital marketing to scale myself as a salesperson, if that makes sense. So
Oh,
I
wow.
bring that both lens from the sales and the marketing. So whenever somebody tries to say marketing doesn't help with sales and vice versa, I because I wear both hats, I can see it from both sides.
What do you enjoy more? Which part of it do you enjoy more?
Well, I love doing sales in my own business, to be honest, but I do like digital marketing a lot. I think that the strategy and figuring out people's next move and ways to like build new relationships at scale with like clients, that's what I really love about it. And copywriting is like sales in a way too. So I've always loved creating content because you're building a relationship with somebody. You're trying to be interesting, you're trying to be captivating. So I got into writing to influence and persuade, which is in a nutshell where I always have been in wearing a sales hat, right? So, digital marketing has really been an extension of my sales capabilities. Let's say that.
I love that. I love that. And I know that you and I actually connected. I believe it was either through LinkedIn or at the time, it was Twitter. Now it's X. But I know that for a while you were also working. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you were working with some like Shopify related brands on marketing and stuff like that as well. Is that right, or am I missing the point on that?
Yeah, no,
Yeah,
not at
you were.
all. I was, yes, I was. I was working with an agency. I've collaborated with lots of other agencies as well, and this one in
That's what it
particular
was.
did. Yep, and so the one that I was working quite a bit with last year, I served a lot of Shopify customers. So that was, I remember we originally connected on X, and I think we were like talking on, well, Twitter X. We were originally talking on a thread somehow with somebody else, and it was related to marketing. And we joked that we should be sharing all of these insights on a podcast. So here we are today.
There we are.
A
Yeah,
year and a
it
half
took a couple of
later.
years.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. How now you've been working for yourself primarily. I mean, other than collaborating with agencies, like one thing I want to know is like I always like to post this question as kind of everybody's in their own different space, but like I know you have a family. You recently just had like twins not too long ago. Like, how are you managing right now, or have been managing more of the work-life balance on your side of things? And what does that look like in your sort of your day-to-day, on your busy days, on your slow days? Like, what does that look like?
Well, I mean, it took me a long time, like most entrepreneurs, to get a little more established. So, when I had my first child, I was like, I'm not building my business all over again. And, same with my twins. It's like, I still worked a little bit part-time. I know that that's not ideal for a lot of people, but I've always wanted to maintain my freedom of working for myself. So I mean, my twins are in daycare now, so I can, you know, work normal hours. But in the past, it's like, you know, when babies are sleeping a lot, like, I just feel like everyone thinks it's such an impetus on you. You know, when you have kids, it's going to be such a career killer or do this and that. But, you know, some of my clients, you know, thought, oh, she's having a kid. She's not going to be able to do anything anymore. So there was a bit of that, but some people stuck with me throughout, these transitions, and, you know, it's been fine. So I've had some loyal clients, and I've had some, you know, think she's not going to be able to do it. I mean, the twins were no joke. That was certainly, you know, that was busy, and because I already had a bit of an established base, I was able to still continue a little bit part-time. I'm working normal hours now, but the balance I was able to achieve through the freedom I earned through years of discipline and you know, making a crappy living for many years and then finally having it work out. And then, you know, you know, like most entrepreneurs, it takes time to build something, right? So I'd rather maintain it than have to start over from scratch.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you say it took time to build it, because I think that's from the outside looking in, when you're not working for yourself and depending on your own sort of day-to-day and the things that you have to put out there in order to either land some clients, or even what, you know, you and I are doing, posting content and helping people and trying to, you know, make an impact in one way or another, whether it's one person or two people, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people looking from the outside in, it's entrepreneurship looks like this, you know, flowers and sunshine type of thing, but it's really not. And especially, I mean, listen, I don't have any kids. But I can only imagine with kids and everything else, like, you really have to be disciplined. And I think a lot of people look at it as, you know, I build a business, I'm going to make a bunch of money, I get to travel, I get to do all these things. And it's very far from that until you get to a certain point where you can actually learn to disconnect yourself from that business and make sure that it's running on its own, or somebody's running it that's capable of running it, and these different things. Like, I just think there's a lot there that people don't see from the outside until you're, you know, in the weeds of it.
Yes. And to expand on your, then based on you saying that, you just, you know, prompted some more responses from me. One, I have freelancers that work for me. So there was three or four people helping with client fulfillment, which was great that I had that set up before I had the twins. So I was able to, you know, kind of oversee things and not necessarily be doing the work myself as much. So that was helpful. The other thing is I saved up a big rainy day fund so that I was able to, you know, finance, you know, my maternity leaves while working part time, you know, if that makes sense. So I would always recommend to anyone to build up that rainy day fund, just because, you know, you never know what life's going to throw at you. Next thing you know, you might find yourself having twins. So
yeah, absolutely. how did you go about, you know, kind of landing those first few clients, and you know, what was that sort of building process like in the beginning? Because in the space you're in, and similar to some of the stuff that I'm working on, whether it's consulting or whatever, it's mm-hmm. not an easy, you know, hey, I'm just going to offer this service, I'm going to reach out to five people and I'm going to, you know, land one. There's a credibility. There's, you know, like you said, the side of things where, you know, you could build trust and authority and different things like that. Like, how did you go about building, you know, kind of from the ground up, building your business, or did you transition from somewhere and it was easier just to kind of lay into that a little bit more?
Well, my first few clients I got, I had an agency in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada, where I'm originally from. My business partner and I, like, what I would do now was not necessarily what I would do then, because this was a very long time ago. I'm starting to date myself here, but we did everything. We knocked on doors. We tapped into our networks. Like, we were going for lunches and coffees. We cold called. We would send emails through on the website. And I think in our first year and a half, we had 50 accounts. So people were buying what we were selling, which was great because we didn't have a lot of experience. You know, like, we were young, mm-hmm. we had laptops, we had ideas, and, you know, people just respected our hustle. And we were in a smaller city. And I don't know if having my business partner with me gave an extra element of credibility at that time or not. So that was in the past. We did everything. And just like now, though, I would still recommend a multi-channel approach. You can't rely on any one thing anymore. You know, like, it's good to go to in-person things and meet people live. Of course, you can be building your authority on social media, back to that whole, I'm communicating and maintaining my network of strangers and people who know me by sharing content like you do, right? You know, building out your personal brand is like key, but that's a long-term play. It's not necessarily going to have immediate ROI. though it can, you know, I've certainly gotten clients from social media posts, and a lot of my client work does come through my network on social media. So you just don't want to be overly dependent on it as all. And then, you know, like you can do cold email outreach or, you know, networking on social platforms, but ultimately you just got to be meeting new people and just getting to know them and then see if there's alignment there before, you know, you go in and do any cold pitching or anything like that. So I'm a little more established now than I was in the past, but at the same time, you still have to go and you still have to go hunting if you're self-employed, you know, and unless, and I think I saw your tweet earlier and it was about building diversified revenue streams. And I believe that that's very important. And myself as a service-based business, I want to be less dependent. Like somebody else said on Twitter lately too, like you don't want to always be chasing your next sale. That really resonated with me because, you know, like that's where you want to still be doing the asset producing income as well in whatever ways you can. Like there's lots of different ways you can go about that. Everyone and their cat and dog is selling a course these days. So I feel like it's a bit saturated, but at the same time, you can download a lot of really smart people's IP through courses, right? So it is a way to fast track your learning. So I'm not hating on that, but I'm just saying, you know, it's like, it's a little tougher now, I think, because a lot of people are doing it, but certainly it's a great way to, you know, get people to get a taste of what you're about.
Exactly. And I think on that point, just diversification as, you know, kind of a headline is I think in most areas of business now, whether you're an established company, whether you're working for yourself, whether you're building something on whatever that is, I kind of had to learn that early on, and looking back on it now from a perspective of, you know, just even running an agency or different things like that, it's like, yeah, you can have these clients paying you a bunch of money every single month. You can have all this other stuff. But when all of that goes away, because one day most of it will go away, and one day you'll get tired of doing the work. One day it's going to happen. But the minute that you can start building those different layers to your business, whether it's income layers, marketing layers, or whatever else it is, anything that makes your life going forward a little bit easier because you're establishing that credibility through those, you know, early days and whatever else it is, that to me stuck out, I think, probably more so in like year two of my business when I realized, I mean, kind of going back to the Shopify space, you know, Shopify, what I always valued there, when I built my agency, we kind of went really, really wide. We were helping WordPress clients, Shopify clients, and all these different platforms. And the one thing that I really appreciated about the Shopify ecosystem was that they had this sort of cohesiveness with their partner ecosystem where it was very much like you scratch our back, we scratch yours, we hand over clients to you that need help. If somebody fits your profile, we'll send them over to you. And they kind of created this organic like marketing partnership channel that really helped. And when we realized, you know, you get a little bit of affiliate money here, you get some, you know, recommendations or partnerships or different things through a different channel, that all started to kind of, the gears started to turn a little bit differently, because now you weren't only dependent on, hey, I got to go reach out to 10 clients again today because we're going to land one or two of them, and I got to do it again tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. When you build these different revenue streams and these different channels, you get to breathe a little bit more as a business owner, especially. Like, I don't know that necessarily employees and contractors would feel that, because they're not having to go out and hunt for the business, like you said, but it's more so this space of, hey, like, what can I do as I'm laying down these bricks? I got to start almost building like another like guest house over here and then a guest house over here, so that if this one goes down, I have somewhere else to live for a little while until I build this back up or whatever that might be. So it's I think that's such an important part of business that a lot of, especially I would say in the service side of the business, that a lot of people miss the point on, and they feel like, oh man, I have 15 clients and this is going to feed me for, you know, the next X amount of days. And it's like, man, all those people can go. I mean, we saw it happen during the pandemic. It could just go away overnight. And then you're just like, what do I do? Like my entire business is going to go down.
Yeah, for sure. And what you said, two important things, like one was the importance of the community, and two, you kind of niche down within that. I have problems with niching a little bit because I've kind of been all over, but if I do think that, you know, like you doubling down on Shopify is obviously a very strategic play for those reasons you said, and the power of the community, whether that's a community like Shopify or even your church, like it could be like all kinds of different ways, but like people in clusters that, you know, are able to, you know, provide those referrals. You scratch my back, I scratch yours, you know, that's that power of community, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. And I like what you said earlier, you guys were in a small town when you and your partner were doing these things. It's like with social media, yeah, you can be out here blurting a bunch of stuff online and you can be selling and all this other stuff, but you're amplifying that to millions and millions and millions and millions of people when you can probably go put up, you know, if you're selling some sort of service or, you know, you're power washing driveways, like go hang up 50, you know, door hangers for people to call you. And I guarantee your chances of landing a client there is going to be a lot higher than like blurting on social media and just using that. So like diversifying, try it here, try it there, try it there. It's, I think that's what a lot of the time people missed the gun on. And I think for me, that was a big lesson, especially when you start see clients like, hey, we can't spend that much more money anymore. Hey, we can't do this. I'm like, oh, we need to figure something else out.
Nothing is forever. Nothing is forever. Always have to be, you know, protecting your downside. And you're right. In a small town, you know, smaller city, but it was like the community, if you show up to enough events and everyone just knew who you were, exactly to your point. Yep. Like everyone knew who you were. When I moved to Toronto, you know, it was like different. Like if I would go to events, none of the same people were ever there again. Like I didn't have that. The contacts, the same people showing up and like getting to know who I was. So I had to switch. That was when I started to pivot more to intentionally writing. And I was like, I blogged for some local, you know, tech websites around here just to build my brand that way. So that was where I got back to transitioning as writing as an extension of sales and, you know, meeting people because the old tricks didn't work, you know, in a big pond anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And to touch on like the community aspect, and you and I talked about this on our last call a little bit too, is like, I have this, I'm missing a lot of it here where I live, which is in the Sacramento area, but the sense of, you know, in real life community, people that you can, that are, I don't want to say like-minded because again, you said something last time we talked, you're like, you don't want to be a marketing person amongst other marketers. You want to be a marketing person amongst people that can, you know, that you can connect with and you can help them, whether it's like a brand, a product, somebody that's not in the marketing space. And I feel like that really hit me because I feel this need, this urge, and like this, you know, my heartbeat goes up a little bit when I think about bringing people together into a single space and everyone just throwing a bunch of stuff on the wall. Hey, I'm working on this. I can use help with this. Hey, I'm having issues with this. And so I think about a lot of online communities too, which is also really good sort of, you know, virtual side of it where you can connect with like-minded people. You can get feedback on your product or in your writing or whatever that might be. And I think for me, that was a really big pillar, the community aspect of it, to get into the online writing game about two and a half years ago. Like, where do you see sort of the next evolution of like communities with maybe more of like a hybrid now that we're out of this like pandemic bullshit that happened, like this, where do you see sort of the community aspect of like business and how people can help each other? Because you and I feel like have this like overlapping community online of people that we sort of interact with, or we see that we listen to, they, you know, read our stuff, that you read theirs and this sort of stuff. Like, so where do you think that goes next? Like, I'm really curious to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I think that the communities, other communities I find myself in, and whether there's people like me or not, is often when I'm going to a training. Like if I go to train or I invest in a course, or like whether that's through a coach or a consultant, like usually when I invest in training, it's usually to, you know, bypass a roadblock I'm in, or just, you know, through your own evolution, you need to invest in yourself. And so I find a lot of the time whenever I do these things, or if I volunteer, volunteering is not a great stream for meeting new people. But yeah, when I go through trainings, that's always a great place to, you know, meet more like-minded people that are working on themselves. And that's often when I maintain relationships with people afterwards. And it's like, my intent is not to be there to get business, but, you know, in these places where, you know, it ends up coming from there, if that makes sense. Like anytime I've ever volunteered, I've been volunteering to give back, but I oftentimes meet people who become clients. So I would say you have to just think a little bit outside the box. You know, I mean, you can join these like more official networking groups and things like that. And like I did Toastmasters a long time ago to practice public speaking. So I've kind of dabbled in a lot of different places. So I guess for me personally, and with these courses, a lot of these course providers and the ones who are really good at it, they're attracting good people. Like if they're sharing the right stuff to help, and you're in the same evolutionary journey, you're meeting like-minded people at the same place as you, but perhaps are working on something different, then that's just a great way. So I think like through training and back to those courses too, you know, as an entry point for people. So I think the online model is here to stay. And then, cause it's just like when you go to like one networking event at a night for something, like everyone's kind of there for the same reason, you know, you don't want to be too thirsty. You don't want to be pitched at too much. So I feel like in more of an organic setting for things to blossom, it's more authentic.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think the thirsty thing hits me is because when you go to these organized events like that are, hey, you're going to network, you're going to meet people here. Everyone's coming with sort of like a chip on their shoulder. Be like, oh, if I don't talk to X amount of people, then I'm not going to get business and whatever else it is. It's like, I'd rather just be like almost at like a collaborative dinner type thing where you can kind of sit next to a few people, have some conversations. One thing leads to another. And that's how the relationship evolves. And I've always, from every aspect of my life, like always preferred the organic way instead of the forced kind of, you know, you have to do this when you come here. You need to say hi to 10 people. I'm just like, no, like get the fuck out of here with that. Like, I'm not going to be forced to talk to people I don't want to be talking to type of thing. So yeah.
For no, sure. And that's all those are the great place, the authentic relationship. So at the end of the day, you only want to do business with people that you like, you want to build a trusted rapport with. So the business is sort of like after the fact, it's like, do I like you? Step one is, do I like you? Right.
Yeah.
Like, let's see, do we like each other? And then if we like each other, perhaps we'll work together. You know, the work doesn't come first.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think it's also this, this kind of thing where, you know, I always used to say this to clients when we got to a certain level. I mean, I think in the beginning, you kind of just are a little bit thirsty for those first few clients or whatever. But when you get to a certain point where you have enough clients and you start, you know, new people start trickling in, I always used to be very straight up with my clients right before that call. Hey, this is just as much as you're interviewing us and wanting to work with us, we have to kind of do the same thing on our end because we don't want to work with everybody. And I think that either it clicks with people and they're like, ooh, I like that, because that means that they're not just going to be yes people or whatever else it is. And then there's some people like, oh yeah, you know, they kind of got their thumb up their ass like, oh no, you don't get to interview me, I'm paying you. And it's just like, yeah, that's a big red flag for me. I don't really want to work with you because that's.
And those are red flags. And if you've been in the game long enough, any seasoned entrepreneur will know that you shouldn't take every deal. In the beginning, you need to get experience. And some of that experience is a little unsavory. And you look at it and you go, never again. Whether it's scope creep or you worked for nothing or whatever that looks like, all those mistakes you made, or that person gave you all kinds of warning lights and you still proceeded and did a deal with them and had to go through that experience. Whereas you've been in the game long enough, you're like, maybe I'll just wait for the next one.
Exactly. You mentioned something about a few things about courses. What's one of your courses that you've taken that really stuck out to you till this day that you say that helped me kind of transform this aspect of my business or my life or whatever that might be? Is there something specific that stands out to you?
Yes, I took a course from Eleanor Beaton. She is a female entrepreneur coach. She's a Canadian lady, but she's got clients all around the world. And I think it's called something else now, but it was like, the acronym was PPP, Power, Presence, Positioning. And it was all about building a scalable asset, like a course. And it did fundamentally change how I set up my business model. So I do sell like a strategic marketing plan as sort of like step one to ideally work with me on that, because a lot of people, they're not, if you don't have a plan, you're kind of like a bit all over the place with what you're doing. Whereas if you have that, you know, strategic plan, it's like, this is where we're going to all be focused for now. And it's just like more precise and more effective. Anyway, so the point of this course was a bunch of people were there to build a course because it's a little bit more scalable to do versus, you know, doing the services over and over again. Mm-hmm. So I still operate like an agency, but I do have this course that I have built also. And I have put, you know, a number of companies through it, both from agency side and just purely through like the Kajabi end of it, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that was a main one for me. And then just lately I did the LinkedIn operating system from Justin Welch, which was really good. That was not, no community networking there, but that was just a course that really influenced my writing style, if that makes sense, because we all know who he is, you know, the solopreneur coach, but he just is very good with his content and, you know, getting a lot of people excited and engaging. So I feel like he's a big hub of network. So if you go and comment on his posts and stuff, you're going to find other like-minded people there. You know, if you go and you engage in his stuff, and he openly tells you to in his course, he's like, I post at this time every day on LinkedIn, come join the party. You're going to get X amount of views. You'll meet people, you know, so he's generous on that front. So it's an independent study course, but he's like, come party in my community and meet awesome people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's I took that course as well. It was really, it was really eye opening in terms of like that whole thing. It's just the only thing I would say is just, for me, that was a good sort of like kickoff point. But I think when you get down to, when you start to figure out your own way of doing things, the template approach to me got really old really quickly from that perspective, where I just felt like you started to see a lot of people pushing the same amount of or same type of content and different things. And that kind of left a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth, where I just felt like that's just not me. Like, I didn't really like that template approach. When I got into writing, things that sort of kicked me off into that was like the Ship 30 course. And that was a very, you know, 30 days, 30 essays, you just kind of write. And they had these templates. And again, I think it's all about what you take, what you need. And for me, I took the part of that I took as a community and the accountability to post something every day to get that muscle trained and get it moving, whether it was quality or quantity, it doesn't matter. It just got me into that aspect of creating stuff online. But they also had these preset templates where I was just kind of like, I don't really want to do that. It doesn't fit me. Whenever I go into one of those templates and I start writing, I'm just like, I don't really want to be binded. It kind of made me feel like I was back in school and the teacher told you, five sentences in the first paragraph, you need this, you need this. And I'm just like, I don't believe it. That's the thing that turned me off from writing. So I didn't want to go back down that path.
For sure. And I guess there's other things in there too about like just how to optimize your profile I agree with you, because I'm not a template person either. Nothing cookie cutter for me. Like I will consume some, but look at people's templates and review it, but still put it through my own, you know, filters to make it your own. And that's what you do as a creator, right? Like, you have to make things your own if you're a true entrepreneur, but it's still great to get other people's ideas and people, especially those that are thriving and things like that. So I do think like there's shortcuts and insights to be gleaned from people who are killing it in their space. That said, I agree with you. And I know you and I were both on the similar writing journey. And the thing I took away from that course was just more so the power of storytelling. So I was, you know, being a little lazy and using a little bit of AI in my writing a little bit last year, because, you know, I had twins. So that was one of my other things I did.
Yeah.
Was I used AI on some of my content to help me be consistent and keep it going when I was really busy. But I've, you know, been trying to do a little more, you know, custom stuff. And back to that whole storytelling, like, AI cannot replace storytelling and your own experiences, right? And that's going to have more impact with your audience.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a good kind of segue with the whole AI stuff. Like, how are you using it since you are running your own business? And I think there's a lot of efficiency that AI brings to anyone that's, you know, doing any kind of, whether it's service business, product business, whatever else it is. And I can share some of the stuff that, you know, I'm using it for, but I'd love to hear how and if you are using it to, you know, make your business a little bit, maybe more automated or maybe more efficient in some way. Like, what does that look like on your end when it comes to using some of these AI tools that are out there? Because I know you're also getting into like video stuff now, doing YouTube and all this. So I'd love to hear a little bit about how you look to maybe use it or already maybe using it.
For sure. Well, I guess like an example I have is I was developing a website lately and with a fractional CFO. And, you know, we were getting in the weeds on his industry pages for his web coffee. And I just threw it into ChatGPT. And it was so funny because he hadn't used it yet before. And so I just, you know, threw our ideas in there and it like blew his mind, really.
On the call,
we like created 4 vertical pages of web copy. We like tweaked it and stuff, but they were all the exact same format. We had to tune, you know, with the prompts and things. That's another course I did, AI for marketing. So I will use it for a bit of content, newsletters. Like, I had a client give me a bunch of bullets about like an experience that they had, and it was like just very choppy notes. And I threw it all into ChatGPT and said, turn this into a story. Boom, you know, there it is, you know, but of course it needs some polishing. So I am a writer. you know? So it's like, you can't rely on it entirely, but it can fast track, you know, that first mm-hmm. draft a little bit. You have to tune it or keep refining. I don't like this one. So, you know, give it to me shorter, take out those emojis. I want a more professional tone of voice. Like, you know, like I still have to inject my own humor because their jokes are not as funny, you know, like whatever. Uh-huh. Right. So yeah. Certainly I would say mostly with content, I am exploring it a little bit with video. I haven't really, I think, I can't remember the name of the tool. Somebody told me it's called Opus. I can't remember. I have somebody swears by it. So I'm still getting in that game with the videos and the editing there, but mostly just for content and, you know, so social scheduling and things like that. But that's mostly it for me. What about you? I know you are more of a user than me with your workflows and stuff. So what are some of your secrets?
Well, I'm kind of in this weird space. So I'm working on I think I've told you about this before, but the agency course that I've been working on, which feels like years at this point, but we have this. So basically it's like how to run your agency or how to get your agency set up and all the little pillars that you need, whether it's how to manage a project, how to onboard clients, onboard team members, like the whole thing, scope of work, scope creep, like all the things you mm-hmm. and I kind of just talked about through this conversation. And one thing I realized is that we had this set up for our agency, you know, initially paid a lot of money to our operations person at the time to kind of keep track of all this, make sure everything. I mean, we had videos. If you looked at this, you'd be like, whoa. I mean, to the point where at one point I was getting ready to sell my agency and I kind of gave them a preview of like, hey, you literally might not need me for very long after the sale process, just because like these documents and what we have here give you, you know, somebody could just pick up where I left off type of thing. And so at one point I looked at it and I was like, God, this is so dense. Like it's very tailored towards what we were doing, but it was very dense and deep. I mean, we have one document that was 81 pages, just simply like really deep, screenshots, everything. And so what I did, I was like, oh man, I am not going to be the person going through this. I don't have that. I have ADHD to the next, you know, level. I was like, I'm not reading this word by word, doing all this other stuff. So I made a copy of it, took all the images out. I copied took a file, threw it into AI and said, okay, here's the plan. I'm creating a course and I basically need you to take each one of these sections. There's this many sections and break it down into a very simplified version that's not so dense, blah, blah, blah. And it gives you, I mean, it does 85, 90% of the work, like right then and there, just gives you the cut up versions. You can literally put it side by side and you can see where, you know, what it did. And then what I do is I'll take that and I'll just go in and sort of add my own flair to it. Like sort of, hey, here's kind of how I want to rewrite it a little bit more in a casual voice or more of a informative way or whatever that is. And I take each one of those sections and I kind of break it up into different layers. So it's helping me save time from that perspective, but it's also helping me look at things a little bit differently where it's like, oh, I would have never caught that this connects to this. And it's, you know, it'll connect like your project management thing to your like onboarding or whatever else it is.
It's like, if you can have somebody on your team that's way smarter than you, why wouldn't you? And it's like, when it spit out that output, where you're not just like, I feel like I'm winning at life right now. Like, I'm telling you, like,
I was like, woo! It's amazing. Yeah. Like, yeah. I just saved myself probably so much money hiring somebody, testing them, seeing if they can do the detailed work. And truthfully speaking, like, I think the whole thing about AI now is, yes, it's a great tool for anybody to use. But if you really want value out of it, it's something that's usable for, you know, whether it's content writing, whether it's this course or whatever, you still have to know the underlying knowledge and the detail that it requires to make that input or that prompt, or even be able to edit what it's giving you to say, no, that's not what I needed. Or, hey, mm-hmm. yeah, that was good. And we need to amplify this a little bit more. So like there's these little tweaks nuances, and stuff that you nuances that you need to still be able to direct it on what to do. And if you don't know the lingo or you don't know you don't know how to approach that problem or whatever else it is, AI is really not going to do a lot of that work up front for you, because you need to, again, the prompting, I think, is the mm-hmm. number one layer to it.
And that's like a hot skill for people to learn and figure out. And that was like the AI for marketing course I took with somebody I met at one of these training events I told you earlier. You know, her and I have connected lately. She's got an AI marketing agency now. She's totally like branded herself as that. And she put together a whole document of all the AI prompts you can use for marketing. And it's just like flabbergasting. It's like, again, you still need to do the details and stuff yourself, but if you can trim out hours and hours of doing a lot of it yourself, it's just like, and you have to have the expertise to be able to go in and tune it to your point. But if you can get 60-70% of that workflow done and you just come in and finish it off, it's like rock and roll.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And now I think also the whole thing about creating these kind of custom like GPTs, and if you're working with a lot of clients that you're doing a lot of marketing stuff, you just kind of keep feeding this like single funnel of like all the information about one client. You keep feeding it, and all of a sudden, like, you can go back you know, a month later and be like, hey, I want some ideas on a newsletter that we need to write for this client. I'll automatically pull all of that information in and give you like, here's five things you can talk about. It's just like, oh, you just saved me so much time of trying to go back through a bunch of Google Docs, a bunch of conversations about all these other things. And I think that's really, it still takes a lot of tailoring. It takes a lot of manual labor. Mm-hmm. But once you do that manual labor, the output of that is really something that I don't think many people will be able to replicate.
For sure. And that's actually something back to our earlier conversation, something I do want to explore. That's on my short term thing I'm going to be doing is ebooks with AI. But again, mixing in your own stories and expertise and experience, but just to have the templating and everything else. Like, there's like, you know, four or five different companies that do it. So I want to play around and test it out, because if you can, again, share your thought leadership in this format, you know, these are things you can just upload right onto Amazon or put on your website as a lead magnet. So it's, again, you can just do long form content and just get a lot of help, you know, with the but you don't want to have some generic stuff. And then there's the whole copyright thing, and it's like, who owns it? And so there's some downsides and you know, potential issues, but that's why you have to make sure that you're really making it your own too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the
other part. Or giving it all your own IP. Sorry. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And that's, I think, another layer to it. And so what I was going to ask, so what else are you working on now? I know earlier you mentioned doing some founder like YouTube videos and different things. Like, what's the format there? What are you working on? What are you trying to, I guess, for yourself, get out of that as well?
Thank you. Yeah. So, well, I guess the YouTube channel for me is a short-term and a long-term goal. One, it's going to build brand awareness, because my thought leadership I'm putting on there is bringing in, you know, other people's expertise. So I love business growth. That's my overarching theme. My course and what I'm all about is that client acquisition. So, you know, attracting that new business. So I'm bringing in all these guests that are going to share their unique spin and angle. Like, yesterday was leadership and LinkedIn. The first one was, you know, with a digital strategist and how to use video. Well, he basically said that if you have a podcast, you should be recording a video like we are now, and just all the different ways you can distribute this one piece of content like we're creating here today across your channels, and, you know, making sure you're getting your SEO from it. And then the long term of that is, you know, hopefully one at some point monetize it. I'm not going to make retirement income off it. But again, back to that asset based effort. So if I'm already doing these things and having these conversations with these people, like you and me here today, we met on Twitter. Most of my guests on my YouTube channel have been people I've been talking to on social media for the last 2 years that were like, boom, you're doing this right away, willing to sign up and come on and share their expertise with my audience. So I'm super excited for that. I'm also doing, you know, some marketing consulting. I've kind of moved a little bit more in an advisory role a little bit these days. So I coach a marketing team and I help them with all of their campaigns and their things that they're working on. And I spoke with somebody earlier today, just needs a bit of mentorship, getting his startup kicked off a little bit. Again, it goes back to that sales and marketing that everybody needs to get, you know, fired up. And sometimes people just need that little bit of support and confidence to, you know, take those bold moves they have to do to grow their companies.
Yeah, absolutely. And where, when you work with some of the people that are just kind of up and, like getting started, getting up and running, is there like a kind of a thread that goes through some of those people that you notice, like, oh, this person's having the same issue as this person? Is there a commonality there that you kind of, you know, it kind of triggers when that conversation kicks off, where it's like, hey, I don't really know how to do this, or hey, I'm kind of stuck with this whole thing, and what do I need to do? Is there something that stands out to you when you talk to some of these folks?
Well, I guess one of the main things is when I say people who haven't started out for a while, most of my clients are not startups. I usually work with more seasoned entrepreneurs. Like I've worked with a number of entrepreneurs. I've like sold companies and things like that before, but it's fun because when they start another company again, it's still starting at ground floor. So
yep.
Most CEOs, successful ones, lots of them that I've worked with, they are not willing, or they're willing to get their hands dirty and just do whatever it takes, you know, like they will do whatever it takes. If they have to go and figure out how to send an email and do things themselves, like they will. Of course, they're bringing in people like me to help assist with the execution of those types of things. And then the other thing too, is a lot of entrepreneurs, no matter how successful, they can be doing $1 million in revenue and they still don't understand marketing. I see it all the time. So like, that's why in my course with my marketing planning is I try to be part training because CEOs, a lot of them of small companies don't know how to use data to make decisions. They don't know if things are working or what they should be investing in. It's kind mm-hmm. of a blind spot for a lot of companies, especially technical people, where it's not yeah. really what they, you know, studying in school or what comes natural to them, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So the common thread is there's often a blind spot with marketing if you're not a marketer. That's something where that's a lot of people one. Need a little bit of coaching and support around and sales for that matter, just revenue generation period, right? Yeah. So that's something that some people can stumble with overall because to be successful, you have to be very consistent. You have to, you know, you have to get your reps in. I mean, sure, you might get some lucky fluke things that happen, but you have to be doing your consistent, disciplined actions if you want to get results.
Yeah. And what are some of your disciplined actions that you take? Because consistency is a very, like, I feel like I can get a tattooed on my forehead and like live by that. And, you know, you can't be consistent. I mean, you can, but you can't. Like, there's so many aspects of life, whether it's fitness, whether it's your business and making certain amount of calls or posting certain amount of times on, you know, whatever that is for you. What are some things that you have you became consistent at and that you've just been carrying on with for a very long time and you just see that sort of compounding constantly for yourself?
Well, I will say, like, I will die on this hill too. And that is how I get my clients on retainers is through that consistency. And mm-hmm. when you set up a marketing program that you have working, that's how I built my business. So if you're sending a regular newsletter out consistently, like each month or whatever that looks like, that's something you want to have that continuity with. And if you're a small business person, this is something where you want to, you know, insert yourself as well if you can help with something that needs to be done consistently because then you have a steady flow of income, right? And you're making a consistent impact and driving revenue and those things. So for clients, you know, whether that's that consulting and advisory or, you know, like if you just continuity is what gets results and success. And like I've learned yeah. that, you know, time and time again, visibility is important. You can't, you know, like there's so many people with social media channels where they haven't posted anything for like a year. Like you may as well not have them if you look like you don't maintain it because it's like it's collecting dust. If this is your approach for how you manage your marketing, then, and it's very common, right? So
yeah.
I would say for myself, yeah, making sure I'm maintaining my social networks. I'm trying to be generous and engage with other people I know. I'm always trying to make sure I'm, you know, looking ahead for my clients at what their next move is. I'm always looking at my own next move, of course, but like, of course, for my clients yeah. as a strategic advisor. So making sure that, you're always being forward thinking. So that's something you always have to do with consistency. But the mundane things, back to that social media post, sending out your newsletter, like you're doing, filming your podcast, you're getting your reps in. You don't know what kind of an impact it's going to have at this time. You just need to commit to the journey. And it's just in some way, shape or form, it's going to come together and bring you some, like, I guess, like, I don't know what your goal is of this, but you will eventually get clients or get clients or contacts or whatever it looks like, you know, like if you get the reps in, it's just going to, the universe will give you the results and the connections and it's just the way it works, right?
Exactly. And I think for me, just to that goal with the podcast, I was just talking to somebody else earlier. It's like, you know, and you're doing the video thing now, but for me, I feel like there's certain parts of your day or your week where you want to consume written content, which is maybe a longer essay or a post or a newsletter or whatever else it is. Then there's days or times during the day, maybe you're eating breakfast or you're doing something else. You just want to watch a YouTube video and you want to hear people talking and kind of get into their brains and what they're talking about, what they're thinking about, and pull even like one little piece of information from that you can walk away with. Out of a 3-hour conversation, you could pull at least 3 minutes to say, yeah. Aha, that right there, you know. And then there's the audio aspect. Maybe you're on a walk and, you know, you have your headphones and you're like, I'm going to listen to this podcast. And so I think for me, my goal is impact in terms of helping one person, that's always been my goal, help one person that listens to this, reads my writing or whatever that might be, just to be like, oh, that. And it's funny because on like Twitter or LinkedIn or doesn't matter where, you'll post something and it doesn't maybe get any traction. There's not much like, you know, noise around it. And then you get a direct message, be like, that post you just sent out today or yesterday, whatever that might be, that hit me differently. Thank you for sharing that information. And I've said this a few times. It's like, there's for every person that like follows you, there's like five other people that are silent followers that are just reading your stuff. They're consuming it. They're just not engaging. They're not those people. They don't want to click the like button or comment or engage. They just want to consume, pull that information and take it with them, which is okay too. And that's why I think when we're talking about, you know, followers, likes, and all these other things, it's like a lot of that is vanity metrics when it comes to the grand scheme of things, because I don't know the people that are listening to my podcast. I just see numbers, and those numbers, those 200, you know, downloads per episode or the 50 downloads per episode, it's completely irrelevant. Like it took me a long time to detach myself from those numbers, because to me, that's becomes so irrelevant. Great. Of course I want to make an impact on a million people or whatever else it is. But at the end of the day, it's just that one person that just listens to something and sends a message or whatever and says, hey, that thing you just said on that podcast with so-and-so, that was awesome. Thank you for sharing that. It gave me a whole new perspective or whatever else it is. And that, I think, is my overall goal with the podcast, with everything else I'm doing.
Facilitate those light bulb moments. And that's great. Exactly. And I mean, we're all facing the same stuff. Like you and I have both been knocked around as entrepreneurs. Like we're talking about our highlights here, but there's definitely low lights too. Yep. And you know, it takes a long time to get going. You get a punch in the face every once in a while, you know, it's hard work. It's not glamorous. And you know, like just when you think something's going to work out, something else gets thrown your way, but it's all worth it. Cause for me, one of my main values personally is freedom. Yep. And autonomy. So I like to be able to design my day so that when I did have kids, I already was able to design and live my life however I wanted, as long as I was always producing and giving value to my clients. If I'm giving value to them, then they will, you know, stay loyal to me. So
exactly. What's one, we were talking about consistency earlier, what's like one skill that you feel like you're constantly like, you or that you want to sharpen, that you feel like, hey, I'm, for me, for example, it's marketing. And it's like, I've always been very good at building and executing ideas and all these other things, but then I kind of fall short on the marketing. And that's usually the main part of the work that needs to happen. Do you have something for yourself that you constantly are just like, I need to get better at that thing? Like you keep kind of highlighting it for yourself.
Yeah. Well, one is a daily writing practice and doing that consistently, because, you know, over the years, I've always been so busy working in other people's companies. So as I'm, you know, building back, coming out of, you know, raising twins and, you know, getting back to where I was before, I actually have more time to work on my business right now than I have in the past. So a dedicated writing practice every day, which I'm trying now. It's just like you, we all want to work out every day, but we don't, but I'm working on that right now. Yeah. I'm tuning my writing process and making sure I'm showing up consistently, visibly too, because I was definitely the shoemaker with no shoes for a long time. And then I think I mentioned earlier, I want to get better at storytelling and, you know, sending out consistent newsletters, just promoting my own business, because I did have the luxury in the past of growing my business a lot through referrals, again, because I had my reps in. I told you at the start, I was knocking on doors, I was going to networking events, I was, you know, shaking hands and kissing babies everywhere. But, you know, over time, you know, you do enough work for people, you can grow through referrals a bit. But now I'm in, you know, ramping back up after, you know, having twins. So, you know, I'm executing a lot more of things that I do for clients, for myself, and it feels good. And that's why it's exciting too, because, you know, it's always something that I always wanted to do, but didn't have time to do. So now I'm, you know, self-actualizing on that lens.
What does that look like for you? Like, is it like a morning thing? Is it a kind of when it comes to you and you sit there like, I need to grab a pen and paper, or like on my phone, or get on my laptop? What is that? Take me kind of through that process of when that spark hits you, because I know some people will, you know, you obviously have like kids and you sort of have to be on some sort of schedule with them, whether it's taking them to daycare. But is it a, hey, I wake up, I give myself an hour before everyone else is awake. Like, take me through that moment of how you approach that daily writing practice and what you're doing to stay consistent there.
Yeah. So it's the first thing of the day. So it's the, and the overarching goal is again, to get to the eBooks and longer form content. So if I'm just doing a bit of a brain dump on a Google Doc right now, so when I turn on my computer, I'm prioritizing doing a little bit of writing for me first before I dive into client work and emails and all of that busy stuff. So starting the day on a Google Doc, doing some writing there. Sometimes if I'm out walking or if I'm doing something, you know, I'll whip out my notes on my phone and I'll just, you know, jot them down there. I might get inspired by consuming other people's content, but it's really just drilling down on that writing practice and staying aligned with what goals I have for this year. Also, I took a writing course, and back to that networking and meeting people. I met, you know, a CEO of a fintech art company in a writing course I took last year, and him and I right now are being writing accountability partners to make sure that we are gonna make sure we walk our talk. So
nice.
We both have some goals that we are gonna, you know, keep each other accountable too. So
yeah. Are you somebody that like, mm-hmm. yeah. Are you somebody that, that also does like pen to paper? Me, for example, I have this little notebook that I literally carry around absolutely everywhere. I have like a little fanny pack that goes across my thing. And every time an idea comes about, like, I love my notes app. I have everything in there, but sometimes it's just this, like, there's a different thing that happens in my brain when I sit there and like, I mean, I literally have like few words that I just write down and I underline, yeah. and that already gives me like a reference point to the thought that yes. I had. Are you one of those people? Or are you more so just all digital?
I do have a physical journal too. And I took a journaling course too. So that was also me trying to get more committed to a writing practice. So you have a part of that too. And I do write in a journal right now. And nice. So I do the physical paper too, but I'm mostly on the Google Doc right now because ultimately it's all got to be on there. But when I'm in a meeting with a client or something like that, I write notes with paper because that's how I memorize things. That's what I did in university too. So I still always write down notes when I'm talking to people because then it just helps me to memorize it as well. But when I'm journaling, for me, I can do it on the computer. I think the pen to paper still certainly has its place. I have that too, and I have my phone. So I'm just trying to make sure I consistently put a little bit of focus time into any of those, you know, channels, is it all helps to inspire. And I've been, you know, finding too, this writing practice, I might, you know, just a dump of random stuff that nobody's ever going to see. But sometimes I'm like, okay, here's my social post for today. Actually, like, boom, this one's going live right now. Boom.
Yeah. Kind of like on the moment type of thing. I love those. Yeah. Those are my favorite posts that I just can, like, I'd be sitting there doing some personal stuff and I see one word and that triggers like a whole different thing. And I'm like, oh, I could post, like, this is something I want to actually post on or whatever else it is. Quick follow-up question, and then I know we're coming up on time, is I have my own sort of journey on this, but what has writing more so recently, because I know you've been doing this for a long time, but like now that you're focused more on, you know, this daily writing practice and all this other stuff, like if whoever listens to this, like what has writing done for you, as you know, in your personal life, in your business or whatever else it is, like the mind expansion or whatever else, like what is writing when you associate writing, when you talk to somebody that you do writing, like what do you associate that with? Like, what is that in your brain that you just say, I need to do this every single day because of reason X, Y, and Z?
Well, so like first step one of this, sort of to respond to this question, is how I got started being a writer. I mentioned, you know, it's an extension of sales, but my first official like article I ever wrote was, one of my clients said, hey, Susie, can you go to a party for me and write about it? And I was like, it's about time I got paid for this. And that's it. My client asked me to go to a party and write about it. And then I became a writer. I started writing for magazines. I started writing for clients. So I guess all I'm saying to your listeners is, you don't need to have some sort of like fancy moment. You don't need to have an English degree. Like you did. Like that was sort of like the impetus moment. Like you just go do it. Like you just go do it. And how has writing changed? You know, it's helped a lot of other people generate a lot of income. It's helped me build a lot of relationships with people. Like to your point about people sending you those DMs, like I've had that before too, where I've wrote something and they're like, that really sat with me. Or, you know, like I'll notice too, sometimes in a sales conversation, someone will be referencing something from a blog on my website or something like that. So it's like, it gives people access to how you think in your mind and what you're all about. And that's why I want to use more storytelling to have people resonate more on that level with you and get to get, get to make their own sense of it. Like the storytelling is not for me. Well, I mean, it is for me, but how you make sense of your own story, people are going to be able to make sense of their own, if that makes sense. So it kind of helps you have a deeper connection with people, if that makes sense. The writing practice, that's like one for me, like organizing my thoughts and everything else. But like when I'm writing for business and work, it's always just trying to be interesting. Like, what makes you unique and special? Like, what are your key advantages? Like, to go back through that marketing lens all the time. And I love working with people when they're designing their website or this and that. Like, they don't even realize their own insights when they're saying it. And I just love being able to extract that from other people, because that's what you got to be leading in with. Like, those hills you're going to die on, those things that are important to you, your opinions, your hot takes. Like, those are the things that are going to really make people be a magnet to you. And your writing, when you're expressing yourself and your values, you're going to attract other people who have the same values as you. So that's what it's all about.
I love it. I love it. That's an amazing, amazing place to wrap this up, because it's been, I just think for me, it's just been, writing has changed so many things. And I went through a phase where I didn't realize how much writing was involved in my everyday life of business. I started off as a project manager. So everything I did, I had to write it out, make sure the description was right and how things needed to be relate to the other person. And, you know, trying to avoid a meeting by writing a little bit more detailed and giving them screenshots of whatever else that is. And, you know, when I got into like actually posting stuff online and sharing stuff and realizing like the connections you can make with people, the people you can reach, the people that you can impact, I mean, it was just like a game changer. And then on the personal side of things, just having, you know, a journal and going to a coffee shop or just sitting here with your headphones on, it's like the clarity, the thought process, the things that are important, the habits and trends that you see through your writing and different things is just, it's, you can't really describe it to people until they kind of start moving that needle themselves. And I think it's just such an important part of any, I told anybody that wants to start a business, like, whatever you can do, just start writing. Like, just start writing, because it leads to so many great things in life.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
And there is resistance around it too. Like, don't forget. Yeah. I mean, it is wonderful, so, but it's resistance. Also really hard work. It's hard work too.
It's so much resistance. It's so much imposter syndrome. It's so much everything. So no, I completely agree. But Susie, this has been awesome. I absolutely love chatting with you. We always have such great conversations. I hope people, you know, do enjoy this and get something out of it. You have such great insight. Last thing I want to leave with is, where can people find you and reach out to you? And whether it's say hello or whatever that might be, what's the best way to get to you?
Sure. Well, if you go to SuzanneHuber.com, you can reach all my social channels from there. I'm most active on LinkedIn and Twitter, X. I'm on Instagram too. But if you go to SuzanneHuber.com, you can check out what I'm all about, see some of my blogs I've talked about here today, but mostly to find my social media channels and connect with me there.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you so, so much for being on. And I look forward to getting this episode out. And yeah, it was truly a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.